Today's podcast is sponsored by GenesisCare, national independent cancer care provider and experts in breast health, diagnostics and treatments.
Hello, welcome to And Then Came Breast Cancer, the podcast for everyone whose life has been touched by the disease. I'm Victoria Derbyshire and my world changed in 2015 when I was diagnosed. I leant on so many people, the nurses and surgeons who saved my life. The Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity believes that no one should face the disease on their own and wanted to create a podcast series which would be there 24 hours a day for those sometimes dark, what am I going to do moments when your life gets changed too. An honest friend, not just for you, but for your own family and friends. We've built up a library where we've talked about things like faith and friendship and fear and the latest medical advances, wigs, reconstruction surgery, relationships and cold caps. And we won British Podcast Gold Award for services to the breast cancer community. There's always so much more to talk about. And today we're going to talk about one of the biggest fears for anyone who's had cancer. One of the biggest fears, of course, is that it will have spread or come back. We've talked about that in different ways a little bit, but what about when you think your cancer may be behind you, but then you get the same cancer again, a recurrence? So not a secondary diagnosis. We know how devastating that can be, but effectively another primary diagnosis. Does it feel like lightning striking twice? It affects around 10% of women, and for many, they say it feels worse than the first time. We have three guests to talk about this, and as is tradition, I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves.
Hi, Victoria. I'm Abby. I'm 41. I was first diagnosed with primary breast cancer in September 2020, underwent mastectomy, chemotherapy and radiotherapy, and I was diagnosed with a local recurrence in the same breast in August 2022. I'm married to Michael and we've got two boys who are 5 and 3.
Hi, I'm Sharon Deep. I'm 42. I'm a mum of two. I live with my husband, Param, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. I went through mastectomy, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and then had a new primary diagnosed after my remaining breast in 2021. I went through a mastectomy, chemotherapy, but no radiotherapy.
So I'm Liz, I'm 48. I was diagnosed with breast cancer aged 40 when I was working as a consultant breast surgeon. I had the full works of treatment and 3 years later, it came back on my chest wall as a local regional recurrence. And the radiotherapy and surgery for that stopped my left arm working properly and it forced me to retire.
Well, thank you all of you and welcome. And some of you, welcome back to the podcast. Now, I wonder if I can ask each of you in turn, how did you feel after you had been treated for the first time? So you'd got through treatment, possibly life is getting back to normal. What would you say, Abby?
I think I felt a mix. I felt very relieved that treatment was over. I felt very much like hopeful that this would be a chapter in my life that I would start to sort of slowly move on from, and it would, you know, go further and further into the past and take up a lot less time and headspace. And I think at the same time, I felt what a lot of people feel, which was that difficulty at the end of treatment where you sort of start reflecting on what's happened, you come out of survival mode and you're struggling a bit. So I did have a lot of anxiety and I think as well, the last stage of treatment for a lot of women, including me, is when you go onto your endocrine hormonal therapy and you're suddenly in menopause. So I think that obviously adds to the mix. So it was a mixed time for me, but I felt generally sort of hopeful and optimistic with probably a healthy dose of, you know, the fears that we all are left with. Yeah.
What about you, Sharon Deep?
Yeah, I think a little bit like Abby, actually. I felt like I was on autopilot for best part of a year. And when radiotherapy finished, I felt like my safety net around me had just come away. And I'm on hormone therapy, still am. And I feel like being pushed into the menopause, that safety net around me gone, even though oncology team was there, my breast nurses were there, but I just felt like I was by myself. And I always say it's like when you pass your driving test and you've got to go out on the road by yourselves without your instructor. And it was a bit like that for me. So yeah, it was really difficult. And I think it still is, at times. And you have a black cloud sort of still hanging over my head. Will it happen again? And I was only 39 when it happened first time. So yes, it's really difficult, I think. Yeah.
Liz? I think I'm the same as both Abby and Sharon Deep. It's that the feeling of elation that you've finally finished treatment, but you have the daily reminder, you take the tablets, the fear of recurrence, which probably took about 2 or 3 years for me not to wake up every day thinking, is this the day it's coming back? But I found social media really hard, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram a lot, but every day there's someone talking about their diagnosis, their recurrence, their metastasis. And there are times when you just don't need to see that. And it's really hard to think, I just want to be Liz. I want to put cancer behind me and just live in a safe space just for a little while.
And so, Liz, tell us what made you think you might be having a recurrence.
So I honestly didn't think I had it. My implant had become really hard and painful after radiotherapy, and I was planning to go flat. And I'd had a large area of scar tissue in my armpit that I'd been having physiotherapy on. And I went to see my surgeon to plan going flat, and she said, let's just scan this. And it was a 3 centimeter local recurrence. And I'm a breast surgeon, and I didn't think that's what it was. And now I was going flat because my cancer had come back. It was really hard. I remember walking around a supermarket crying, thinking, I can't get bras to fit me. I can't get clothes to wear. What is going to happen in the future? It was, and because local recurrence is so rare, I felt alone. There were no trials. There were no research. There weren't huge swathes of women I could talk to.
I had an implant reconstruction. It had also become very hard and contracted from radiotherapy. And I'd had the conversation with my plastic surgeon. We were going to try and replace the implant because it was just really uncomfortable. Around the same time, I got a lot of redness and inflammation in that breast. And I told my team about it. And they said, you've probably got a little infection in there somehow. And they gave me a course of antibiotics. And I like to think I'm very, I try and keep myself really informed and really vigilant and aware, but that was not something really on my radar to be really alerted by, and none of them were alerted. So I took my antibiotics and the redness went down, but I was thankfully due a regular scan anyway, a few weeks later. And I went for the PET CT and the report said, you know, something possible that we need to look into here. But they still reassured me it's scar tissue, it's nothing. And I had it biopsied. Also confirmed a 3 centimeter, what has come to be called a local metastatic recurrence, because their best guess is it was linked to the first tumor. Although for me, it got a bit crafty and changed its receptors. So as well as then having to go flat, which was quite an adjustment, I'm on long-term chemotherapy antibody drug treatment now.
Okay.
So that's been a really big adjustment.
I'm going to come back to that phrase in a moment.
Yeah.
Sharon Deep, what about you? How did you know? What signs did you see?
Yeah, I didn't see any signs, actually. And I went for my routine mammogram in my remaining breast. I didn't have a reconstruction on my right side, which was my first diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I nearly missed my mammogram appointment, actually. And I had written it in my diary. The day before, I said to my husband, oh, I've got my mammogram tomorrow. And I went to it, felt absolutely wonderful and thought, I'm going to be fine. And I think about 3 weeks had passed and I hadn't heard anything from the hospital with my results. And I thought, actually, I'm going to be fine. This dark cloud that I have over my head, it's going to go away. And I remember I was picking my daughter up from school and we were in the car and I had a call from the breast unit and it was on Bluetooth. So my daughter could hear. She's now 16. It was really difficult. And the nurse said, the booking lady said, she said, we're going to call you in. We need to call you in for an X-ray lead biopsy. And I said, okay. And try to sort of really play it down because I hadn't had any information as to what they had found or if they had found anything about following on from my mammogram. Mm. And I said, yeah, that's fine. And they said, 18th of November, okay. I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. And I said, I've got to go now. I can't really hear you very well. And I put the phone down. And I remember my daughter said, what was that about? I said, oh, I think it's just a routine checkup. It's fine. Mm. Okay. So I went home. I got home and I remember just calling up the breast nurse and I said, look, I've had this phone call. I don't know what it's about. I haven't had any letters, nothing, no phone call. And she said, are you sure? I said, not received anything. She said, look, they found some calcification, which looks benign, but because of your history, we need to check it out, make sure there's nothing sinister going on. Mm-hmm. And I said, she goes, look, more likely than it's going to be fine. I said, okay, that's fine. So I went in, had the biopsy and everything. And I think about 2 weeks later, I got a call from the nurse who I'd spoken to on that evening. And she said, I'm really sorry, but they've found DCIS. It's 3 centimetres of DCIS. Doesn't look
like I'm going to ask Liz to explain DCIS in a moment and also calcification, but do carry on, Sharon D.
Okay. And yeah, they said, you know, it's DCIS, it's 3 centimetres. And, you know, we recommend that you have a mastectomy again because, and I said, that's fine. I just want it out. Mm-hmm. And I had the mastectomy. I had the mastectomy in December that year and in 2021. Mm-hmm. And prior to the operation, my surgeon said to me, look, we can do a double reconstruction, do it in January, do the mastectomy, do the reconstruction. And I said, no. I'm not waiting. I want it out now. And my surgeon, it was the same surgeon as I had first time round. And so I had the operation and I developed a seroma, so fluid in the cavity. And I went and got it syringed in January. And my pathology reports haven't come out. And I said to the nurse, I said, Jackie, I said, can you give me my results, please? Have they come? She's like, yeah, I think they've come. And she came back in the room and I was by myself. And she said, are you sure you want to hear this? I said, just tell me what it is. And they had found obviously the DCIS, but they had found 2 further tumours of 10 millimetres each. And she said, look, you'll need to have chemotherapy again. And that's when my world sort of broke down because when I had cancer the first time around, because we didn't know much about COVID, mm-hmm. my husband's health, he's a GP. And to keep me safe, he stayed in the Airbnb for 6 months while I went through chemotherapy.
Really?
And my auntie came to look after me because my mum was stuck in India. So that was a really difficult time. And I think I was scared that, oh, I don't want my family to split up again. I don't want to do this by myself again. But luckily, we sort of stay together, the 4 of us.
Yeah. Liz, just if you don't mind, a simple explanation of calcification and then DCIS, please.
So the way we pick up breast cancer on a mammogram is looking for little white spots on a black background. And those spots are calcium, which forms in the ducts. And you get the calcium because the breasts produce milk. And we look at irregular patterns where it looks different to normal calcium in the breast. And calcification can be a sign of DCIS or invasive cancer. DCIS simply means breast cancer that doesn't yet have the ability to spread and move around the body. So it's not invasive. Okay. But because it's the beginning of breast cancer, like Sharon Deep, we'll often find small areas of actual breast cancer inside the area of DCIS. Mm-hmm.
So what is it like being told a second time that you have breast cancer? I don't mind you taking
that.
It's horrible, isn't it? I can't believe this is happening again. And because it's not proper metastases, you think, does this mean it's going to come back in again? What happens to the future? Can I make plans again? I can't go through treatment again. It was bad enough last time. It's this weird kind of, this cannot be happening.
Yeah. I agree, Liz. It's just like this gushing of all sorts of emotions, isn't it? And I think you just think, really, again? And you start to feel guilty. You start to feel what have I done wrong? Have I been eating wrong? Have I been just a rubbish person? Or, you know, everything just comes to the forefront and you just, I think all rationality just goes out the window. Well, it did for me at least.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, I was just so shocked. And I like you, Sharandeep, I was like on my own with my breast surgeon and I just couldn't believe what she was telling me. And and yeah, exactly what you said. Suddenly your mind goes to all these places of what did I do wrong? Like, I didn't exercise enough. I didn't eat the right food. And, you know, logically, that's not really a useful narrative, but you sort of can't help it. And I think I found and I still am finding, you know, all these months later, just it's really hard to accept. Whereas I think the first time around, it felt like this happens to so many women and, you know, you've got to get through this year, 18 months. It's really difficult. And whereas I think the second time, I don't know, for me, it's just difficult to accept it and say, okay, this is
happening. Here we go again. Yeah. It's interesting, Abby and Sharandeep, to hear you say, what have I done wrong? So you're essentially blaming yourself. Liz, what about you?
I didn't think that. I mean, we know breast cancer can come back 30 years in the future with full treatment in people who exercise and don't drink alcohol and have it. It's just, there's so much we don't know. But there was a bit of, did I not eat the right things? And people asking me, well, it's because you didn't exercise enough. And it's not your fault. It's just...
Sorry, did someone say that to you? Yeah, or did they ask you that question?
They'll often comment on Instagram, you know, maybe people saying, oh, it's because you eat sugar or because you use a deodorant, all the myths that people believe cause cancer. You get a lot of that and it's rubbish. Mm-hmm. It comes back because there are a couple of cells that have just stayed dormant and have suddenly woken up. It's not your fault, but you do feel that guilt. Yeah. And it's another layer of complexity to deal with.
And I wonder, because you're a former breast surgeon, did that kind of knowledge help you?
I think it was the hindrance. I think because I've looked after women who've had...
Wow.
Because women who've had proper stage 4 metastatic disease, I've looked after them, I've seen them die. It's very hard for me to unsee that. And although most local recurrence is potentially curable, it's still hard for me not to remember what I've seen as a junior doctor. But I had to put it out of my head and say, this has happened and I don't know what's going to happen in the future. All I can do is go through the treatment and be as healthy as I can.
When you were told there was a local metastatic recurrence, the word metastatic, you know, it's, we know what it means. It has, for me anyway, for most, I would have thought, a really dark meaning. Did that go into your head?
Yeah, my oncologist actually dealt with that really well. So we had a phone conversation about things and he'd explained to me the difference between different kinds of local recurrences and that they had been doing their best in the MDT, the multidisciplinary team meeting discussions and looking at the pathology to work out, is this most likely a new primary or is it most likely connected to the first tumour? Partly because of the treatment plan it would dictate and the drugs that I would be able to access. So he explained to me that this is what they thought it was. It did not mean metastatic in terms of spreading to other parts of the body and a stage 4 diagnosis. So he was really clear about that. Mm-hmm. And that actually it was important because it would allow me to access Enhertu, which is the drug I'm on, because my recurrence was strongly HER2 positive, one of the receptors. And so that actually, you know, it was important that we got it right about the treatment plan. So I think I was lucky that he dealt with it in that way. So the word unnerves me like it would unnerve anyone, but I really had the context explained to me very well.
And Liz, you're not obviously an expert in Sharandeep and Abby's recurrence, but I feel like I want to ask this because listeners will want this answer.
Yeah.
Is it possible that what the recurrence in any of you was there at the beginning, the first time around, and had just been missed?
It's unlikely.
Okay.
It's unlikely. Breast surgeons remove breast cancer with a margin of normal tissue all the way around it. And we give radiotherapy to zap up any cells left behind. And then drugs like chemotherapy and Herceptin to stop that. But you cannot remove every cell. And I often describe it like peeling an orange. You can't remove every tiny piece of pith. There will be some microscopic cells left behind. And if they're not growing, they're not targeted by treatment. And sadly, years down the line, they can start to grow again and form either a recurrence underneath the skin And also having breast cancer once means you're more likely to get it in the other breast. And right. That's why you have the mammograms every year for 5 years to pick it up, which is what Sharon Deep had.
Mm. I think it's interesting. I don't know how Liz or Sharon Deep felt, but any of the kind of blame I had was very much self-blame. I didn't really feel like you missed something, you know, to my surgeon or whatever. Yeah. And I felt like it was really important because I was sticking with the same team that I really needed to believe and have that trust. And I did. So it's also reassuring just to hear from Liz from another perspective that, that's the kind of right approach.
Yeah, but I agree. I remember when we went back the second time, my husband and we asked the question actually to my surgeon. We said, was it there before? And he said, no, it wasn't there before because your mammogram was absolutely clear and the ultrasound was clear. And I think I never, ever blamed my medical team for anything. Mm. And I think they were so brilliant with me. I think it was just the blame within myself and blaming myself for everything. And I think putting my children through it, putting my husband through it. And I think that's what was the guilt lay there, I think.
It's the impact on the family, isn't it? You don't want to put them through it again. They've been through it once. That guilt that you, like, you sign up for sickness and health, but you don't think you're going to have sickness and then sickness again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely felt like that.
What was the impact on your families? Can I ask you, Abby, first?
Actually feels like it's been really big because we'd sort of had 6 month break from when I'd finished all my treatment. So the Herceptin aspect of my treatment had finished. So it hadn't been very long and we were really kind of still putting ourselves back together. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that happened after the recurrence diagnosis was quickly going into surgery. So removing the tumour, removing the implant and the skin and resecting all back to my chest wall. So that was kind of then explaining to the kids, well, you know, something's going on. Mummy's going into hospital and they're older than the first time. So there's a lot more explaining. With my husband and my mum and the people that are really close to you, just kind of seeing that worry just rise back up. Mm-hmm. And then sort of starting on the treatment. And unfortunately, the day I had my first Enhertu, which is this chemotherapy antibody drug I'm on, my husband was rushed to A&E with a serious heart condition.
Oh my God.
And so I spent the first night post that first chemo in A&E, and he spent 2 weeks in cardiac unit and continues to manage that. And whilst that was, we were told, viral, there was a stress element to it, I'm sure, because he was really there for us so much and had also been on survival mode. And I just think that blow of, oh my gosh, we're here again. Mm. So it feels like it's had a really big impact on the family. Yeah.
Liz, what would you say?
It was more, we put our life on hold. We were starting to make plans again and suddenly it's unpicking everything and cancelling everything. And how do I tell my family again? Mm. The trauma and everyone crying and you're trying to process it yourself whilst you're looking after your loved ones who don't know what it means. And it's almost as a patient, you're having to be a doctor and explain things you don't know to your, you know what it's like when you're diagnosed the first time. Mm. Just, you feel guilty that you are potentially ruining your family's lives.
I felt the same as Liz, actually. I felt that I was ruining everything for everybody, my husband, for my children. And when I had the second diagnosis, my children were sort of, I think, I've got a 14 and 9, I think they were. You feel like you're taking away their childhood. You're making them grow up faster than they should be. I think my daughter sort of became extremely protective of me. The Zoladex and the menopause and the joint aches and all that, and the kids seeing that and my husband seeing that, it's not nice for them, it's not nice for me. And you sort of try to normalize everything. Mm. Sometimes if I'm sitting on the floor, for example, and I can't get up in one scoop, my daughter's there, she's like, do you want me to help you? I'm just like, no, I'm fine, because I don't want her to get into that carer mode. But I think when I got the second diagnosis, I think my only concern more than anything was I didn't want the family to be disseminated, my husband somewhere, my children somewhere. I didn't want that. And I think that's was my biggest fear. Mm. And my son actually didn't know that I had cancer at the time, both times, because
wow.
he had just turned 8 when I got my first diagnosis. And he didn't put chemotherapy and cancer together. He just didn't know. And we only actually told him about 3 months ago that I had cancer. And I think he had an inkling that it was something devastating. Mm. Because he did ask us, he said, when I'm older, will you tell me what you actually had, what was actually wrong with you? And then my husband and I decided that we need to tell him because it needs to come from us.
And what was his reaction?
He gave me the biggest hug. And then he said, can I go out and play football?
Oh,
said,
my God. Yeah. That means it's all right. That means it's all right.
That's it.
So did you have to say to people when you told them about the recurrence, look, I'm not going to die?
Well, I guess.
Yeah, I had to tell my mum that. Yeah. Go on, Liz. Go.
I was going to say, the thing is, we all die. And we don't talk about it. And actually getting my recurrence made me sit down and do my wills and my lasting power of attorney. It was a huge elephant in the room. And by doing it, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to be dead in 6 months. Mm. But actually planning my death and getting it done meant I could move on.
Wow.
If that makes sense. The admin is done. Yes, I'm going to die. The will's done. I can now move on. Mm. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but everyone asks, does it kind of come back? Are you going to die? And it's really hard dealing with all those questions because you're trying to put that out of your mind. It's just local. It's curable. I should be fine. Mm. And then you start to worry.
I think it was probably just people were asking that question that we've been discussing, you know, or does this mean it spread somewhere else? And sort of having that kind of conversation, which is totally understandable, but then explaining it, you know, it's hard. And, you know, then it kind of is raising the questions in your head going, well, no, it hasn't, but, yeah. But yeah, I think it was, just explaining that. But then there's, you know, like with all of these diagnoses, there's so many like permutations of it as well. So it's explaining to people, well, for me, this is what's happened with the receptors and that it means X, Y, and Z. And that's not the same for everyone. So yeah.
Did any of you think, this is obviously you thought this is devastating. Did any of you then think, but at least it's not a secondary diagnosis?
Oh,
Liz,
definitely.
You're nodding.
Yeah, definitely. That sense of relief that you're still potentially curable and treatable was huge. But then the guilt that I don't have stage 4 disease when friends do and friends are dying, it's screwed up, but you do feel that weird kind of pull.
Mm. Definitely. And I think I agree, you feel that guilt and then you feel that weird kind of, I need to, or, you know, I am grateful that I don't have that, but equally what I do have is also really shit.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of, that just, again, mixed feelings.
Yeah, it is mixed feelings. I think you think I had to sort of tell myself, oh, at least you're in a better position than somebody else who is at stage 4. But then actually that didn't make me feel better because I felt really rubbish as well. Because I thought, but I've got it again. That's not good. That's just not good. So yeah, it is, it's mixed feelings.
So having had it again, how has your, I mean, Liz, you've talked a little bit about the organization, you know, the admin that you did, but in other ways, how has it changed your approach to the rest of your life?
I think I'm really aware that life is short and you don't know what's around the corner. And
but you were aware of that after the first...
But I was aware of that before, but then it's that it's suddenly... Initially, I thought, right, if my cancer came back, the average life expectancy for stage 4 is so many years, so I won't plan beyond that. And I got really, really morbid. But now I'm thinking, I'll get through this and I'll get through it if it happens again. And I'm going to stay as healthy as I can to deal with whatever happens in the future while still having those days where you eat a packet of biscuits and go and have cocktails because it makes you feel good. I think it's just being really aware again that not to take anything for granted. Mm. It just...
Yeah, I agree.
the bin still needs emptying and the dishwasher needs filling and life goes on. And bucket lists, I think, are crazy. We should just do stuff now. But it really made me think we have to do what we want now because you don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, I found it quite interesting because I felt like when I've reflected on kind of the period when I'd finished treatment for my for the first diagnosis, as I said, that was a really hard time. And I'd made quite a lot of promises to myself that I didn't end up really keeping about, prioritising certain, around my, things around my health and how I would deal with work and all of that sort of thing. And I almost feel like, wow, it's actually taken me two cancer diagnoses to actually really kind of wake up a bit and say, no, this is what I need and want to prioritize, and also to give myself that permission. But it also was a real wake up call for me that sometimes like the pressure we put on ourselves, as working, women of a certain age and all of that, it takes something so huge to happen twice before you just give yourself that permission and go, no, I am going to prioritize my health and how we live our lives. And so I feel like everything's really trial and error for me, getting used to the new treatment I'm on. But it's about just trying to be positive, trying to be optimistic, being healthy. But that takes a lot of work and a lot of time. So it feels like a real commitment and it feels like an ongoing process.
Yeah, I think it's such an effort to sort of change your mindset from what you're so used to for so many years of your life. I think I sort of always saw both diagnoses. I had death knock on my door twice, even though it was treatable. Mm-hmm. And after the first diagnosis, I thought, I'm going to change my lifestyle. I'm going to be better at things and I'm going to be better at prioritizing myself. And then I sort of fell into a cesspit of going back to what it was before cancer. And you just think, right, just you sort of kind of be back what you were before cancer, but that's never going to happen. And I think I tried to do that. And then when it came again, I thought, I've got to really buck up my ideas and pull my socks up. And I've had another knock on the door. So, you're trying to change that mindset, and it's really difficult sometimes, but I've become much better at putting myself first. On a Sunday, I'll oil my hair, I'll put a face mask on, I'll be in my pajamas until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll tell everyone to sort their own lunch out because I'm not doing it because I'm looking after myself. So I think, I've started to do things like that, which makes me feel better.
Liz, your recurrence was 2018. Sharon Deep, yours 2021. Abby, yours 2022. So we can see the difference in years there and how far you have come from the recurrence. Can I ask you all finally, how would you describe your mental health now? Liz?
It's a roller coaster. I didn't realize that depression, anxiety, PTSD is like a roller coaster. I had my routine mammogram and I was right back in the beginning walking down the corridor. And I think it's social media can be hugely triggering for me. And it's learning to recognize when I'm having a wobble, when I'm having a bad day, and to step away. Most of the time, I'm absolutely fine and I don't worry about it coming back again. But it's how you handle yourself when you are sharing your story. And that's what I find really hard.
Have you been diagnosed with PTSD?
No, I haven't, but it's very common. A lot of people experience it. And often when you're back in that environment, you're walking down to have the mammogram, you're suddenly all that memories, the sights, the sounds, you're right back where you were. And it can be really, the scanxiety, really, really triggering. And I think I've learned to tell my husband, right, my scan's coming up. I'm going to be a nervous wreck for the week before and I'm going to be horrible for 3 weeks after. Give me a break.
Yeah. Sharon Deep, how's your mental health?
Yeah, I have really good days and then I have really, really down days. I think I started to read a book. I think it's about reconstruction. I think it's by Rosamund Dean, I think. And lots of triggers. And I think I'll just cry. And my husband will be like, why are you crying? I'm just because I've just had enough. I've got these massive scars across my chest. I've put on weight. My hair's, I love my hair now, but at some points I was just like, I just want my long black hair again. And my joints hurt and I've got the menopause, my libido, you know, all that kind of thing. And you just, sometimes it's really rubbish, but most part I'm absolutely fine. And it's about sort of allowing myself to ride through my emotions and accept what I've been through. Because sometimes I'm sort of thinking, really, is that what's happened to me again? And I think, so I allow myself to cry, I allow myself to be sad, and then sort of ride through that emotion as and when I need to. Mm. And I'll explain to the children, I'm just not feeling too great today. I'm feeling a bit sad. I'm really sorry if I'm not nice to you, or I've shouted at you, or, you know, so I've got to sort of lay that bare for the kids and my husband.
Sometimes just feel like I'm kind of living in this game of snakes and ladders where, you know, you're sort of on the up, but then treatment comes round, knocks you. And then by the time you're at the end of the cycle, you're starting to feel better, you're down. And then I'm on 3 monthly scans. So this anxiety comes around, you know, back on the hair loss journey. So it feels really up and down. I do struggle, like hearing what you're saying, Sharondi, like I kind of struggle to kind of cry and let it out. I think I turned back on that sort of survivor mode, you know, but because I'm in a more long-term situation, I'm really trying to change that approach and just trying lots of different things, from fitness, you know, hypnotherapy, you know, engaging with lots of the support they have at Future Dreams, just trying loads of different things just to try and feel good for as much of the time as possible, and then allowing myself to have the crap days like we all need to do, and feeling just fed up.
Yeah. The meetups at Future Dreams, do they help? Obviously you're going to say yes, because why wouldn't you? But in what way then?
I find they help so much, because you just end up finding conversations where you just feel really seen, really heard, and just really understood. And that's just so comforting. And it's in a really lovely environment, and, you know, there's no kind of pressure. And people just seem to read each other well. So you don't really end up in those conversations where you feel too awkward or too triggered. And if you do, I think you can take yourself out of it. I just think they really get it right. It's been my experience.
Liz, why is so little known about this?
I think because it's so rare. So although about 10 to 12% of people will get a local recurrence in the first 10 years, it's more common for triple negative. If you've got an ER positive cancer, it's only 2 to 3%. So because those numbers are so small, there aren't enough to do research, to do trials. Mm. I would maybe see one or two a year as a breast consultant surgeon. And actually, I don't think I regularly told my ladies who'd had a mastectomy how to check their chest wall, and to look at the skin and to look at the nodules and tell them what to look out for.
Okay. Do you want to get, is there any more you can add to that for people listening right now that's really useful, pragmatic advice?
Yeah. So I've done a video showing my mastectomy scar on my YouTube channel. Basically, it's looking at the skin over the chest wall. And if you've had a reconstruction, it's the skin over the implant or your tummy fat. It's looking for little nodules or lumps or bumps that are along the skin.
When you say nodule, I think of a lump. I think of a
like a little lump. Like a little pea-sized lump or a nodule underneath the skin that you can feel. Right. Often it's just fat necrosis or a cyst. Sometimes those nodules can be red. They can get inflamed. They can start to bleed and ulcerate a bit like a spot. That could be the cancer coming back. Mm. If you've kept your nipple, you may find that the nipple gets pulled in or bleeds again, and you may find a lump in your armpit. So again, every month, have a look in the mirror. Have a good look at your chest wall, see if there's anything different. And if you're worried, get it checked out.
Okay. I always ask this of our guests at the end. So what would you share finally with anyone listening who might be going through this right now, Sharondi?
I just want to say it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to feel vulnerable. It's okay to cry. It's okay to feel absolutely rubbish. But, you know, if you've done it once, somewhere inside there is the strength to do it again.
Oh my God, I can see Abby and Liz both nodding in agreement to that. Go on, Liz.
I've got nothing else to add. Mm. But I think with a podcast like this, it's knowing you're not alone. You've got three women here who have been through it, who are going through it, who will help you get through it.
Exactly. You'll get through it, I think. You wouldn't believe it if someone told you this is what's going to happen. You're going to have to deal with it. But, you know, you do. And there's still laughs and good days and all the great stuff in life that doesn't fade away. So, it's just adjusting to another new reality.
Thank you all so much, Liz, Abby, Sharondeep. I really appreciate you speaking in such frank terms. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Then Came Breast Cancer is brought to you by the Future Dreams Breast Cancer Charity, which provides practical, emotional, and psychological support for anyone diagnosed with the disease. It's a factory original and 6 Foot 6 production.
Our podcast is intended to be a message of support for everyone who has been touched by breast cancer, and that's why our guests share their personal and unique stories with you. They express their personal opinions, which don't necessarily reflect those of Future Dreams or our sponsors. Our guests' individual stories do not constitute medical advice and shouldn't be treated in any way as a substitute for professional expertise or a consultation with healthcare professionals. This podcast is not offering to treat your cancer, but it is trying to help by talking about it. So hopefully you realise that you are not alone.